Matthew 27, 57 through 66, as near as I can tell, doesn't cover this question.
Not this question, but it runs further down.
So let's go over to Mark 15, 42-47. And so in Luke 23, 50-56. 23, 50-56. Well, I'm missing the part where they broke the legs of the... Of course it is. Now, yes. Leave us then read John 19, 31-42. Since Jenny, you found it, would you read it?
Since it was the day of preparation, and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who had been crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once there came out blood and water. He who saw it has borne witness. His testimony is true, and he knows that he is telling the truth, that you also may believe. For these things took place that the scripture might be fulfilled. Not one of his bones will be broken. And again, another scripture says, they will look on him whom they have pierced. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took away his body. Nicodemus also, who earlier had come to Jesus by night, came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds in weight. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen cloths with the spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now in the place where he was crucified there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there.
All right, thank you. I'm not sure that this is a properly phrased question, but it says, how did the soldiers make sure that the ones being crucified were dead? I'm not sure exactly that, because the second question indicates that what is he talking about in the first question?
The breaking of the legs.
The breaking of the
legs. How did they ensure that they were going to die soon?
Right. So I should have picked up on that sooner and said, no, we need to rephrase that question. So, so how did the soldiers make sure the ones being crucified were dead? We don't know, but they did break their legs. For what purpose? So, Carolyn, they would die sooner, right?
Yeah, because they wouldn't be able to push.
They wouldn't be able to support themselves anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they would die fairly quickly after that. But they didn't want to do that too soon because they wanted to see their agony for quite a while, I suppose. But, all right, so why did they not do that to Jesus? So they must be able to tell when somebody is dead. That makes a lot of sense to me. A lot of people will say, well, you know, what is it, the swoon theory, that Jesus just passed out on the cross, and when they took him down, he wasn't really dead. So, but obviously there was at least one doubting Thomas there, and what did he do?
Stabbed him,
right? So he took a javelin or whatever it was. What is yours? A spear in 34 is what it says here. Oh, okay. All right, so the guy had a spear, which would be something on a longer pole, and thrust it into his side. So, who's got an idea of that last question? What does that illustrate? Linda, did you come up with something?
I believe that he's talking about perhaps asking what scriptures does that fulfill. And because it had said that it said that it was not a bone would be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually in three different places.
Yeah.
Psalms 34, where I'm reading this, my scriptures correctly, 34:20. Exodus 12:46 and Numbers 9:12.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't reading it correctly either. I thought it said 22, and I thought there was something in Psalms 22 that talked about bones not being broken. But let's, is it, don't remember which one is which now. So, Exodus 12:46, is anybody there yet? So, Exodus 12 and 46 says,
It gets there. It doesn't start
there. Yeah, 43 maybe. And Jehovah said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover, there shall no foreigner eat thereof. But every man's servant that is bought for money, when thou hast circumcised him, then he shall eat thereof. A sojourner and a hired servant shall not eat thereof. In one house shall it be eaten. Thou shalt not carry forth aught of the flesh abroad out of the house, neither shalt thou break a bone thereof. So the editors of this Bible have simply keyed on break a bone. So that's not necessarily, unless it's quoted here, not necessarily a prophecy. But indeed, what does the New Testament say Jesus is? The Lamb. He's our Passover. Yeah. Right. And then the numbers, is that 9 or 40?
Numbers 9, verse 12.
Yeah. Jehovah spake unto Moses saying, yeah, and he's talking about the Passover also. Oh, this is where he gives permission for those that have missed the Passover on the first month to make it up in the second month. And so break a bone in verse 12 there is what he's keying on. And then in Psalms 30 and 34, actually. And 20. Yeah. So starting in 19, it says, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but Jehovah delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be condemned. Jehovah redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that take refuge in him shall be condemned. So that's once again, a psalm of David. It says, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech. So, I'm kind of surprised that those are the only three that our Bible references. Because there is a direct one. Does Psalms 22 have that in it?
Well, it's Zechariah. Are you talking about the
not break a bone thing?
It just says verse 17,
I may count all my
bones, and they would stare upon me. They part my garments among them, and from my vestry they cast lots. Deliver my soul from the sword, and my garment from the power of the dog.
Okay.
Save me from the lion's mouth. So it doesn't actually say anything about breaking bones.
So, that's not the one, but there is a place where it says a bone of him shall not be broken. Let me see if I can find that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Psalm 34:20 says he keeps all his bones, not one of them is broken. That's pretty close.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess I'm just hallucinating, I guess. Oh, so John 19:36 has a reference.
That's
the one we just looked at. All right, so they shall look on him whom they pierce is in the next verse. So
the answer to what does it illustrate is fulfillment of prophecy.
I think that's probably the conclusion that we should come to. So, how did soldiers make sure that the ones being crucified would die quickly? Why didn't they do it to Jesus? What did they do instead? And what does that illustrate? So, it illustrates, yes, that he would be the prophecies that how he would die.
And the type of Passover lamb.
Right. Yeah, the Passover lamb is something, I guess, it's important that we need to keep that in mind also. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. One more thing.
Yep.
The other one that was fulfilled was that pierced his side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Zechariah 12, verse 10.
Zechariah 12, 10.
Mm-hmm. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication. And they shall look up to me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Whom they have pierced, yeah. Yeah, interestingly enough, it says there in Zechariah 12 and 10, the American Standard says, oh, where it says, and I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication, and they shall look unto me whom they have pierced. Which just by the English simply means that they will look to him for a reason, not just to look at him, but when you look unto someone, it's for a purpose of reason of some sort. Oh. All right. Anybody want to comment any more on this one? Okay. So I find this terribly redundant. Who buried the dead body of Jesus? Well, they wouldn't bury a live body. So
Joseph
of what? Where's Arimathea? Perfect. Is what?
Arimathea was the where he was from, right?
Yeah. Did you have something, Randy?
Yes. Just going back to reading on whom they pierced.
Yeah.
Revelation 1:7.
Revelation 1:7 on piercing.
He is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, even those who pierced him.
Oh.
And all the tribes of the earth will mourn over him. So it is to be. Amen.
All right.
So when he comes again, even those who pierced him will see him.
They that pierced him, yeah.
Of course, he was pierced with nails as well as the spear.
It's true. That's right. Yeah, if you think about this and talk about that verse 34 of John 19, and it says, one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side. So it would appear only one person hit him with the spear. But like you say, he had at least three other, or perhaps four, nails in him. So, yeah. All right, so who buried the body of Jesus? Of course, that was Joseph of Arimathea. And who else? Nicodemus. I think we find that here in John. Yeah. Yeah, starting in verse 38. Yeah, notice that it says in verse 40, so they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen cloths, etc. So they, of course, they both showed up at the tomb, at the site of the crucifixion. And so they did this together. Both of them worked together to do this. So it's interesting that the American Standard Version says that the mixture of spices, the American Standard says 100 pounds. And Jenny, you said that the English Standard says like 75. I thought, well, it says 100. Is it 100 or 75? Of course, there's a footnote, or a reference, rather, to 100 pounds. And compare chapter 12, 3. Oh. Okay.
So a litra is apparently a Roman pound, but mine says 11 and a half ounces or 326 grams.
326 grams?
Yes.
Okay, keep that in mind. All right.
Well, the verse says about 100 pounds.
Yeah.
No.
No, I just wonder, there's 25 pound difference between those two versions, but what they're doing is they're looking at the Greek word here, or the Greek words, and seeing what that is, and that this would be one of the places where I would think that the American Standard Version kind of faulted themselves in their translation. If indeed that's the case. So all right. So we've got to briefly summarize the burial procedure. Linda, did you do a deep dive on that?
Let's see. Nicodemus helped Joseph by wrapping his body in linen cloths with the spices. And they put him in Joseph's new tomb, laid him there, which was in the garden, this tomb was hewn out of rock, and they rolled a stone in front of it.
Okay. And I believe here in John, one also says that this was done after the custom of at the end of verse 40, it says, as is the custom of the Jews to bury. One thing you'll notice about the Jews' tradition even today is that they feel that the person that dies must be buried rapidly, sometimes within 24 hours, I think. I went to the Jewish funeral of a coworker that passed away. And they had put him in just a plain casket like you'd see on, Gunsmoke type thing. And, pardon?
Pine box.
Pine box, yeah. Except it was, shaped in the coffin shape. So, but they had the proper, robes, coverings, covering it with the various Hebrew verses, I think, on it. So, yeah. In this instance, all they apparently did was just essentially roll up Jesus in this mixture of spices and linen cloths and just carry him over to the tomb. I imagine that these weren't the only two there. I mean, Joseph went and asked Pilate for the body. What was Pilate's thought? Yes, Carolyn?
I was looking in the Mark passage, and it says, Joseph of Arimathea came, a prominent member of the council, who himself was waiting for the kingdom of God, and he gathered up courage and went in before Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. So this was no small thing.
Yeah. Go in there thinking that, well, Pilate doesn't like me, maybe he'll crucify me too. But, you know, if he's a man of prominence in the Jewish faith, then it's actually going to be his own brethren, as it were, that would attack him, at least, you know, verbally and whatever.
Pilate was surprised that Jesus was already dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But why did he die more quickly than the others?
He didn't drink any of the anesthetics.
Yeah. So.
Would the beating also have made?
Certainly. Yeah, there's no indication that they did or didn't flog the other two. So, yeah, certainly that would have. You know, usually we see, you know, Jesus on the cross and, you know, there's a little blood here, a little blood there, and you go. But I've seen a picture of what somebody thought, and I mean, it looked like a bloody mess standing there. So, the Roman soldiers didn't mess around when they did a flogging. That a good percentage of those who received the flogging died because of it. And so he's probably lucky to have survived that, and you could probably use the term at least half dead type thing. Linda, you had something?
I'm just going to mention the fact that also all of this took place. It wasn't like that he had a good night's sleep beforehand. They took him in the night and held the trial and all of that. He'd been up for well over 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus the physical condition that he's in now.
Yeah, it's true. All right, so that's, I think, what's meant by the burial procedure. What they went through is pretty much that. I don't know that we can see anything. Of course, there's another mention of a burial procedure process, I guess we should say, in Acts, right? What'd they do in 5? Lied and died, right? Yeah, I think it says, yeah, in verse 6 of chapter 5 of Acts, it says, and the young men arose and wrapped him round, and they carried him out and buried him. Then when his wife came along, it just said they came in and found her dead and carried her out and buried her by her husband. But, so, wrapping about was apparently something that was common to do for burials. And of course, we see that, you know, in Egypt, for example, when they, at least we can see it in the burials that are uncovered. Of course, these are mostly royalty, and so, but they're all wrapped up in cloths and everything too. Yes, Adam.
Isaiah 53:9 says, "And he made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death."
Oh, where was that? Isaiah 53:9. Yeah. So when it says in Isaiah 53:9, they made his grave with the wicked and with a rich man in his death, although he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. How did they make his grave with a rich man?
Joseph's tomb.
It's Joseph's tomb. Though it was new, had not been used. He was in the grave that belonged to the rich man. So, yeah. Thank you, Adam. All right. Let's go on to question 30, which would be the last one for lesson 25. So we can drag this out for 20 minutes, right? You look like you're going to say something, Randy.
I was trying to find Arimathea.
Oh, yeah.
I have a Bible map app, but it shows the current map. It says where it exists on the modern map. But I'm not familiar with the modern names. But it's just east of Tel Aviv.
Oh, east of Tel Aviv. Oh, okay.
Hold on a second. I gotta zoom in. Carolyn says, "Where are the bodies of water? I can see the Mediterranean."
Well, Tel Aviv is right on the Mediterranean, so.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the wrong computer. I don't know if I have that on there. I don't have Google Earth on here. That's just ridiculous. Oh. Okay. But I do have it on my phone.
Northwest of Jerusalem.
Northwest of Jerusalem and east of Tel Aviv. That makes sense.
Says it was the preparation day and the Sabbath was about to begin. Now the women who had come with them out of Galilee followed, so yeah, there were some more with them,
mm-hmm.
and saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and perfumes, and on the Sabbath day they rested according to the commandment. But on the first day of the week at early dawn they came to the tomb bringing the spices which they had prepared. So they saw that it was like maybe kind of incomplete. Like this had to be done. So they went back and took care of the things that needed to be done. And then as soon as the Sabbath was over, presumably, or that they could safely go or whatever, then they went and intended to
do it proper like.
Yeah.
Yeah, there must have been more. I mean, if those two, Joseph and Nicodemus, just wrapped his body in spices and cloth. But yeah, like you say, there was probably more to do than just that for a proper burial. All right. So, for some reason, I thought Arimathea was up on the Asian coast.
On the Asian coast?
Way up north?
Yeah. But I'm mixing that up with another city, I think, that starts with an A up there also. I think it's where the ship went that was taking Paul to Rome. They stopped on one of the... Yeah, well, the only one that comes to mind right now is Alexandria, and of course it's in Egypt. But all right. How did I manage to go back to? All right. let's just go through number 30 here. Any other comments right away? Okay. So how was the tomb of Jesus secured, and why was it secured in such a manner? So what did they do? So the Jews did what?
They went to Pilate.
Right. The Jews went to Pilate and said,
we remember that he said he was going to raise up.
Right.
We don't want his disciples to steal the body and then claim that he's been risen from the dead.
Yeah. And so I would imagine that some of them probably thought that he was going to rise from the dead too, because they saw the things that he had done. And later on they say that a notable miracle has been performed. We cannot deny. Later on they said that in the book of Acts. But so I think some of them had perhaps a thought in their mind that, well, even if he's going to raise from the dead, we need to make sure that he didn't get out. So not sure, though, if someone could raise himself from the dead.
He's a fake.
Right. Yeah, probably most of them thought exactly that he was a fake, and that they were going to come and steal his body away. And everybody would say, see? Yeah. They'd just steal his body and roll the stone back. And they'd say, all right, well, he said he would rise in 3 days, so let's go look. And, oh, he's not there. Huh. So, yeah. All right. So, how was it secured? With the rock, right? And?
A seal. The seal was to ensure. So, it says in Matthew, it says that Joseph rolled the stone in front of it, but then the Pharisees asked for it to be made secure, whatever that
means. Made secure, yeah. Means. Right. And I believe it says that it was a great stone. It was not some, little rock. And so, they have pictures of tombs. Yeah. They have pictures of tombs in Israel, that show this big old rock, 6 feet tall type thing. And it was rolled down a sort of a slot in front of the door. And since it was rolled down that way, it was very difficult to get it back out. But they would have to do it because, generally speaking, tombs were multi-use things. They very consecutive generations and stuff in them.
A vault underneath a castle or something that was the family crypt.
Crypt, yeah, that's it. Right. Much like that. All right. And why was it secured in such a manner? We already talked about that. Because they thought that the disciples would come and steal his body away. All right.
And they set a guard. I don't remember
whether
we
mentioned that. That's right. They set a guard. We didn't mention
guards.
Yeah.
There was more than one.
Yeah.
And evidently they were Roman guards because upset their Sabbath tradition to.
Right. Yeah, they couldn't do anything. So, and they went and mentioned to Pilate that, essentially saying, you need to take care of this. And so he took care of it. That was different. When they went to get Jesus in the garden, that would have been temple soldiers. Here it would be Roman soldiers for sure.
And if I'm misreading it, it says verse 63. Sir, we remember that when he was still alive, that deceiver said, after 3 days I am to rise again. Therefore, the orders of the grave being secure until the third day. And then down to 65, Pilate says to them, you have a guard, so they can secure if you know how.
Mm-hmm.
Would he talk to the Jews at that point?
Yeah.
So he says, you have a guard, so.
I don't think he's saying you personally own a guard, as it were. I said, I'm giving you a guard. Go.
Here's your guard.
Take him and go.
Oh, okay. So not use your own.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The American Standard has a footnote that says, take a guard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go make it a sure. Make it make it sure as you know, whatever that's supposed to mean. So, yeah. So, yeah, I think, yeah, when it says there, you have a guard, I don't...
You get one.
Yeah, you're going to get one, yeah.
The wording on mine, make it as secure as you know how, if that makes more sense.
Yeah, and I'm sure they did a good job, telling the Roman soldiers, well, if you could put a little more caulking right up there, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah. Yes, Jenny.
Well, this is probably in the next set of questions, but
no doubt.
We get into Matthew 28, and the guards go tell the chief priests what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, tell people his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. So the governor has some sort of say in what ultimately happens to them. They're probably his
minions.
Yeah,
yeah. Because if they were temple guards, this wouldn't discussion wouldn't have taken place. And we know that Herod is very lenient with guards that let people go, right? As we saw, what last week, and was it Acts 10, 12? 12, wasn't it? About Peter's release. Somebody found it last time, and I was listening to the recording. I think it was 12:10. Let me see. When they're, yeah. So the Herod from all the expected 19, yeah, commanded them to be put to death. I have a footnote that says led away to death. So what does the ESV say in verse 19?
And after Herod searched for him and did not find him, he examined the sentries and ordered that they should be put to death.
Ah, it's much what the American Standard says. New Americans say the same.
To execution.
What?
To execution.
To execution. Ah.
Ordered that they be led away to execution.
Ah, okay. Led away to execution. So they probably had some vague idea of what was going to happen to them. Yeah, when it says that there was an examination, I'm thinking that the examination was not a, so what do you guys think? You know, so probably examined them like they examined Jesus. All right. That's in the 6 minutes we have remaining. Oh, apparently not.
Back to Matthew 27.
Matthew 27.
Verse 62.
62.
Now on the next day, the day after the preparation, wouldn't that be the Sabbath?
The day after the preparation, I would think it would be the Sabbath.
So he was crucified on Friday.
Friday.
And they wanted to get him off the cross before the sun went down.
Right.
And they got him in the tomb. And then it says, Mary Magdalene was there, the other Mary sitting opposite the grave. And on the next day, the day after the preparation, that's got to be the Sabbath, which, according to John, was a high Sabbath, because it took place on
during
Passover.
The Passover, yeah.
Passover and Sabbath. But it's interesting that the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together with Pilate on the Sabbath. They're not at the temple. They're not they're breaking their own rules.
No kidding.
They're going to go talk to Pilate.
Yeah, right. Now, why didn't they enter into Pilate's place when they were bringing Jesus to them? But now they're doing that. So it looks like it's the same exact thing, except it's on a more serious day, as it were. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. He says, I read a book once called The Source, by James Michener. And it talks about essentially the history it talks about the history of Judaism is really what it's talking about, but it's mostly about Israel, and they were talking about this. Let me find the verse again. About soiling themselves and things like that, and it got me to thinking about the Sabbath journey. You know, they say that there was a Sabbath journey, and I'm not sure how far that was. But apparently, some of the rabbinical treatises later on indicated that you could walk further as long as you didn't go out from under a roof. And so apparently in a lot of the Jewish towns, they had canopies strewn all along, and people could essentially walk all over the city because they never were out from under a roof. So all sorts of twisting and turning of the of what was originally said that was completely different. But and apparently that's historically been the tradition of Jews, at least back when Michener wrote this book, which Michener was back in the 30s, I think, wasn't he? I don't know. But who knows? So, all right. Okay, let's just go ahead on to the next question then. So in lesson 26, we're talking about the resurrection then. And so now we're back to Matthew and 28, 1 through 8. Carolyn, would you like to read that, Matthew 28, 1 through 8?
Now after the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to look at the grave. And behold, a severe earthquake had occurred, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled away the stone and sat upon it. And his appearance was like lightning, and his clothing as white as snow. The guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who has been crucified. He is not here, for he has risen, just as he said. Come, see the place where he was lying. Go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead, and behold, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you." And they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy and ran to report it to his disciples.
All right. So, who did he say this to then? The angel?
To Mary Magdalene and the other Mary.
I assume the other Mary is Jesus' mother, but I think there was another. There was Mary, the wife of Clopas, was that it? And there were at least, I think we came up with like four Marys, right?
They're going to name women again, and none of them say his mother as far as...
Mary, the mother of James and Joseph.
Yeah, Mary, the mother of James, is the one that they say, and I think maybe the next one.
Oh. Okay. All right. Let's look at Mark then, the first, or chapter 16, the first 8 verses. Want to read that, Randy?
Mark 16, 1 through 8. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome brought spices so that they might come and anoint him. Very early on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb where the sun had risen. Then they were saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us at the entrance of the tomb?" Looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away, although it was extremely large. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting at the right, wearing a white robe, and they were amazed. And he said to them, "Do not be amazed. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who has been crucified. He has risen. He is not here. Behold, here is the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." They went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had gripped them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid.
All right, thank you. All right, so we have then two more scripture readings to cover next week. And talk about why did the women come to the tomb of Jesus and what did they see when they arrived there, which obviously we've just heard about. That'll be it for today then. And we shall commence with the first question of lesson 26 next week.